The Israel Report with Rolene Marks.
Rolene, a very good morning to you all the way from what's going to be a very sunny Johannesburg. How are things in Israel?
Well, I'm very jealous because I'm speaking to you from a very, very chilly and wet Israel.
Yeah, well, you know, you can't always have it the way you want it. We have Louis Karpus reminding us every single morning that he's in Cape Town and how wonderful it is in Cape Town. So I'm just going to tell you that the weather in Johannesburg at the moment is pucker. Now, you'll notice I came to you a couple of minutes early because I know how you and I can huck. And there's a lot to huck about today. So maybe we should get started. Let's talk about Iran.
Well, let's take a look at the year that was, because it's the last day of 2021 and this year has felt like the longest decade ever. I'm sure many of you can agree. But let's take a look at where we are as we head into the new year 2022. And the biggest issue for Israel going in to the new year is Iran and the threats from a nuclear perspective that Iran poses, not just to Israel, but to the region as a whole. It is not just Israel that is concerned with the Iranian nuclear program or the hegemony of Iran, but it's also countries like the Emirates, like Saudi, like others that are very, very concerned that we see this country with very, very nefarious intentions trying to encroach on the territory here. So where we stand at the moment, over the year, you would have noticed Israel has struck significant targets in Syria, in Lebanon. These are Iranian targets, invariably weapon smuggling targets. We also know that Iran likes to use their proxies, Hezbollah in Lebanon and Hamas in the Gaza Strip. Yesterday, pictures posted on social media of the upper echelons of Hamas and Hezbollah meeting in Qatar to discuss ways that they can escalate violence against Israelis. I mean, imagine they would use their plans for good, like how to help their citizens that are living in absolute dire straits. But that's a whole other story. Israel, of course, being engaged over the last year with the United States, with the United Kingdom, who's proving to be quite a significant ally. Just this past week, the RAF and the IDF signing memorandums of understanding on greater cooperation between the two armed forces. Israel talking to France, talking to other allies around the world about how important it is to prevent a nuclear Iran. We are awaiting to see what's going to happen with the Americans with regards to any kind of agreement, how to deal with Iran. Will they go back to some kind of agreement? Will that be scrapped? Will they go back to sanctions? Whatever the situation is, Israel has made it abundantly clear that we will be in a position to protect and defend ourselves should the inevitable happen, should it come to that. And our armed forces not only receiving a significant increase in the budget allocated towards them this year, but also conducting a series of drills to make sure that whatever the situation, we are prepared.
Sure. So there's so much that's been going on this year. So Iran, of course, has been a major issue. It's been an issue for a very long time, but there's been so much else going on. You know, you've had operations, Guardians of the Wall. There's been the Vaccination Nation. There's this coalition that came into power, which we mimicked in our local elections. What you did on a national stage in Israel, we mimicked locally with regards to what's happening in our metros in South Africa. Of course, it was the year to celebrate the Abraham Accords. So there's so much more to discuss. So let's start with the Vaccination Nation.
Well, let's start with that. So Israel started of the year, moving from being the startup nation or the innovation nation to becoming the vaccination nation. We were the first country to start rolling out our vaccine program, leading the world per capita on how many of our citizens we have managed to vaccinate. And look, today there are still swaths of the public that haven't been vaccinated. Some of the more religious communities and a very, very small but vocal contingent of anti-vaxxers. We don't have as many anti-vaxxers, and they certainly don't share the kind of language that we see with some of them in places like the United States and other parts of the world, or the United Kingdom, where they've got Piers Corbyn, the brother of Jeremy, doing ridiculous things like threatening NHS workers and stealing their vaccines, like I saw the other day. Quite preposterous. But we led with that. We led with rolling out the second vaccine, the third vaccine. Where we stand at the moment is we are doing clinical trials with Sheba Medical Center, looking to see whether or not we need to roll out a fourth series of vaccines against Omicron, how Omicron is responding to treatment, etc. But our health minister announcing last night that we will be administering a fourth battery of vaccines to the immunocompromised. Right now, just the immunocompromised, because the cover that they have with vaccines lessens over the months. And it also hasn't been without controversy. A lot of the media, mainstream media, criticizing Israel. Why aren't we giving vaccines to the Palestinians? For very simple reasons, even though they share a epidemiological footprint with us, they did not want vaccines from Israel. They made it very clear, stating they have their own Ministry of Health. Israel, incidentally, is not responsible for vaccinating Palestinians, not according to the Oslo Accords or any other legal accords. We would have done it out of just good neighborliness, but they didn't want our vaccines. They also didn't want COVID aid from the United Arab Emirates, because that aid landed in Israel, which is very, very short-sighted. Nevertheless, we will be donating over 1 million vaccines to African countries. We don't know which ones they are. We gave a whole lot of vaccines to South Korea. We needed those jabs. But we are very proud that we can donate over 1 million vaccines to countries in Africa that really, really need them.
Yeah, and tell me about the move towards the operation that you mentioned, and how that changed things, the Operation Guardians of the Wall.
Well, let's take a look at Guardians of the Wall, which took place during May this year, because this really was the seminal event of the year in Israel. We have had, since 2014, relative quiet between Gaza and terror elements within the Gaza Strip. And it's important to note that the Gaza Strip is run by Hamas. Hamas are internationally recognized as a terror entity. In fact, the United Kingdom have taken that a step further this year, and anyone who is found, they've proscribed Hamas. So basically what that means is anybody supporting Hamas, Hamas is recognized as a terror entity and illegal under the law. And if you are caught in the United Kingdom wearing shirts that support Hamas, waving flags that support Hamas, using the same rhetoric that supports Hamas, you can be imprisoned. So this year, Hamas politicized very, very heavily the Al-Aqsa Mosque, as well as the rent dispute in the neighborhood of Sheikh Jarrah, also known as Shimon HaTzadik, Salman the Righteous, that neighborhood in the East Jerusalem. Now, many bought the rhetoric. In fact, we saw unprecedented attacks on Israel and Jews around the world, and we're still battling a wave of absolute unprecedented anti-Semitism, the likes which haven't been seen since the end of the Second World War. But in response to that, Hamas fired rockets, starting with Jerusalem, and then over 4,300 rockets fired on Israeli citizens, not just in the south. These rockets and missiles reached deep into the country, some into my city of Modi'in, some as far up as the Arab towns of Taibeh in the north. Yes, they fired on the Arab towns as well. Thank goodness we had our Iron Dome anti-missile batteries in place, intercepting at least 90% of these rockets, mortars, projectiles fired. We also need to note that the Iron Dome doesn't just save Israeli lives, it saves the lives of Palestinians as well. Chad, you're a military man, you know how a military reacts if citizens and civilian infrastructure are killed and harmed. Without anti-missile batteries, we have to go in, troops on the ground. You know what that eventually leads to. At least 460 of those rockets falling short or misfiring in the Gaza Strip, killing and injuring civilians there. But, of course, a military operation wouldn't be without its controversy. We had the major criticism leveled at Israel for blowing up the media building which housed Associated Press and Al Jazeera. In fact, it's actually one of the most highly searched incidents of 2021. But Israel heavily criticized for not providing intelligence beforehand. Again, a military operation. So, you know, we have to use our intelligence very, very decisively. But it was found that Hamas were using that building as a human shield, as they use their civilian infrastructure as a human shield to fire on our Iron Domes in an attempt to overwhelm them, render the building a legitimate military target. And I urge our listeners to look for a report issued by the, they call themselves the high-level military group. I know not the most original name, but Colonel Richard Kemp, former captain or commander of the British forces in Afghanistan, and various other generals from around the world have studied Operation Guardians of the Wall quite intensely, looking at it from various perspectives, issuing a report, a fascinating report. I urge you all to give that a read. And of course, to me, what was the most daring and chutzpanit event, which was our spokesperson from the IDF putting out a very ambiguous tweet saying that IDF on the ground and in the air are battling terror entities in the Gaza Strip. Now, the New York Times and various other mainstream media took that to mean we were in on the ground in Gaza. Well, we weren't in on the ground in Gaza, but Hamas, thinking that we were coming in, sent their operatives into the tunnels to launch attacks, and for their efforts received about 250 tons of ordnance fired on those tunnels from our jet aircraft, which really led to the majority of casualties in the Gaza Strip.
So we have coalitions in South Africa from a local government perspective. We want to know if they're going to work for us in the coming years. The coalition that's now been formed in the Israeli Knesset, leading to different ministers being appointed by from different parties, are we going to see this succeeding? Is it succeeding as we speak, and can we see it going into 2022 without any issues, considering, of course, the news coming out, whether it's true or not, that Netanyahu's aides destroyed a whole lot of documents through shredding prior to Bennett taking office?
Well, Netanyahu, who is undergoing his own legal woes at the moment, and has come under heavy criticism for the handover to Naftali Bennett. He is now head of the opposition. After four elections, we finally have a very, very broad-based coalition. We've got parties from the far left to the far right and everybody in between. And while we can disagree on many domestic issues, the major issues, security, those kind of issues, we all pretty much agree on. And of course, there are going to be tests to see whether the coalition government is holding firm. There has been some criticizing of Bennett, the way that we are dealing with the coronavirus crisis, having to institute a travel ban. You know, very, very complicated when you look at a country like Israel, because we're not, what we do here doesn't just affect us, it affects diaspora Jewry as well. But the major, major test of the year was whether or not a budget could be passed. According to Israeli law, if you cannot pass a budget, the Knesset, that's the parliament, dissolves and you go to elections, which is exactly what we didn't need. So our first major test we passed with flying colors, and areas that are getting a significant increase is the Arab communities are getting an increase to their budgets. The military is getting an increase to its budget, as well as the education ministry. So very, very important there. And we have this rotation agreement now between Prime Minister Naftali Bennett and Foreign Minister Yair Lapid. Yair Lapid will become our Prime Minister after Bennett has served 2 years. This seems to be the popular agreement. And a lot of criticism when these two got together, the two most unlikely bedfellows. But the power really rested on one man, and that was Mansour Abbas, chairman of the Islamic religious party called Ra'am. He made quite an extraordinary statement last week saying, Israel is and always will be a Jewish state. He now has to concentrate on uplifting the situation for minority communities, a major departure from the past. And we also saw a change in presidents. Our beloved President Ruvi Rivlin stepped down after his term came to an end. We swore in our wonderful president, much beloved by all of us, Isaac Herzog. But the good news for all who love Ruvi is in his lovely ninth decade, he is 80-something years old, he has met a new lady friend or companion. So we wish him every happiness with his new lady friend.
And with that being said, we wish you every happiness as we go into the Western New Year. So it is the new year for us of other faiths as well as other parts of the world. So a very happy new year to you, Rolene, and I look so forward to chatting to you again next week.
Well, I'll see you in the new year, Chad, and to everybody listening, may it be a healthy, a happy, a safe, a prosperous one, and looking forward to seeing you all back in Israel, hopefully very soon.